With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
Good to be with you on a Friday. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you. All right, so Seth, I normally would not bring this up on our show, except for there's a really good chance the Texans are going to be drafting a quarterback in the draft next year, I would say. I'd say a great chance, barring a reconciliation with Deshaun Watson or a Davis Mills out of nowhere taking the league by storm. I think they're drafting a quarterback next year. And I got the Heisman odds sent to me the other day, and I started looking at them, and JT Daniels, the USC transfer and Georgia quarterback, is the favorite at 5-1 to win the Heisman. Spencer Rattler is second on there at 7-1. Bryce Young, reportedly endorsement millionaire, Alabama quarterback, he's 10-1. He's third on the list. I say all this, and there's several more quarterbacks. I say all this to say that as I ran my finger down the list of Heisman Trophy candidates, I go, wow, these are all people who Seth and I have talked about being potentially the quarterback for the Houston Texans next year. I mean, this is practically a Texans draft preview, this Heisman odds board right now.
We can have a Heisman watch / Texans draft show. And we should be pretty well versed in all of these guys by the time of the draft next year. Unless all of a sudden Davis Mills comes in week two and becomes offensive rookie of the year or something,
right.
then we'll cast aside our pathetic Sam Howell, Spencer Rattler discussions, our dreams about Malik Willis and whatnot. So this is something we have to keep an eye on. The thing that I'm concerned about right now, Sean,
yeah.
And I know what your response is going to be, but just let me tell you what my concern is right
okay.
now.
Yeah,
because I've been through this before. I got a little bit of the PTSD when it comes to the Texans having the number one overall pick in the draft.
You were on the team when they had the number one overall.
Yes, and I covered another one. This is my concern. It's that every time the Texans get a number one overall pick, they're the opposite of the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah.
They do it in a year where there is no clear-cut, awesome stud. Hey, this guy should definitely be the number one overall pick in the draft. So, you know, David Carr, full credit to him. I think, you know, he probably would have gone in the first round somewhere in a normal year, especially these days where it's easier to draft quarterbacks. But I think even at the time, people figured, okay, he's not really a number one overall talent, but you want to draft your quarterback, so you force a square peg into a round hole a little bit. And then likewise, in 2014, is kind of the same deal. It just wasn't the year to draft a quarterback with a number one overall pick that year. So I don't... And so far right now, when people talk about these quarterbacks, there's a little bit of like that. There's no magical arm, you know. Spencer Rattler is going to be really good production-wise because he's in that Oklahoma offense, but he doesn't have the natural talent or the polish of a Kyler Murray or a Baker Mayfield.
Right.
There's a lot of projection going on here. So if the Texans do end up with a number one overall pick, I'm nervous that they're going to end up getting screwed over once again.
Yeah, it's funny, Seth, because the 2 years that they got the number one pick but didn't draft a quarterback was 2006 when Mario Williams was drafted, and 2014 when Jadeveon Clowney was drafted. You could argue that in those years, there didn't even wind up being quarterbacks if they had reached for them with the number one overall pick, that would have worked out.
I forgot about 2006. I wasn't even thinking about 2006.
You were on the team then, too.
It's that freakish. Three times. One time they did take a quarterback, but it was in a year where that really wasn't a consensus number one. That was a forced number one overall quarterback pick.
And if they had tried to force it in 2006 and 2014, it wouldn't have even worked then either, because the first-round quarterbacks in 2006 were Vince Young, Matt Leinart, and Jay Cutler. Now, you know, the liner wound up being a Texan, actually, as a backup. You know, Cutler would have been interesting, I suppose. And Vince Young, maybe in a different situation and playing in his hometown. Who knows how that... But then in 2014, in Bill O'Brien's first year, a lot of people were clamoring for a quarterback. Hell, I was clamoring for Johnny Manziel. I'll raise my hands here. Mea culpa. I clamored for Johnny Manziel. But there was... I mean, ask the Jags how it worked out reaching for Blake Bortles. So you're right. To be honest with you, Seth, I thought the same thing as I looked at this odds board, because I went back and looked at last year's odds board, because I'm thinking, man, Devontae Smith ended up winning the Heisman. Was he even on the board last year? And I looked at the odds board last year, and the two heavy favorites, much heavier favorites than JT Daniels is this year, were Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. And I looked at it and I go, man, why couldn't the Texans get sideways with Deshaun Watson and suck last year when Trevor Lawrence was available? You know what I mean? Because chances are it's going to be, if they draft a quarterback, chances are it's going to be a bigger reach than Trevor Lawrence. Let's just put it that way.
Why are they all sucking? Why do they always suck at the wrong times?
I know.
That's the question. Why can you not time it the way Jim Irsay does, basically? Yeah. Jim Irsay's got the luck of that horseshoe.
He does. I mean,
that's kind of my new initiative, is to turn every horseshoe upside down in that damn facility.
Mm.
Let the luck pour out of it like blood from a hypodermic needle.
I know.
Having said that, yeah, your response, and I know this is what you're thinking, is, yeah, okay, look, the last 2 years, whether it be Joe Burrow, yeah, whether it be Kyler Murray, whether it be whomever else, there have been a whole lot of guys who weren't regarded as consensus number one overall picks, or even perhaps first round picks,
yep,
that ended up being pretty good. You know, pretty good gambles in the first round.
Yeah.
And I think there's a good chance that happened this year, because the guys are getting drafted. A lot of these guys that come out of nowhere are doing it after they've only started for one or two seasons.
Yep.
In the old days, you didn't want to draft a guy in the first round unless he had at least 3 years experience as a full-time starter in college football. So it makes sense that there are more guys kind of emerging out of nowhere, because these are the guys that would have been, oh, okay, They had their breakout season in year two, and then they had a great year three, and then he came out as a junior, and then we drafted him.
Yep.
You just don't have as much time for that anymore. So that's the exciting part about it is, yeah, a lot of these guys look really unpolished. Spencer Rattler looks really unpolished, but maybe he shows a bunch of polish this season, and you end up feeling a whole lot better about him, you know, come May next year.
Well, and scheme-wise, Seth, the two worlds are converging much more now than they were 5 or 10 years ago. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot more concepts being used, I think, in the NFL now offensively, playbook-wise, that come from the college game than there were back when inexperience was a much bigger issue for quarterbacks coming into the league.
Yeah. So, and I think, too, inexperience is, like, when you look at Spencer Rattler, there's part of his game where he kind of, it's just a little too loose and disjointed.
Yeah.
He has the arm talent and the athletic ability, but he'll kind of, like, he gets to the back of his drop and he just kind of starts drifting around, and then for no reason at all, he'll throw off balance. It's like if a shortstop has time to set his feet and throw to first base, he takes the time and sets his feet to throw to first base. If you have a shortstop who's trying to throw off his back foot to first base for no reason at all, that's Spencer Rattler a little bit right now, and that's a little bit of a kind of a hurried, inexperienced look. This year, he might be back there and just go back
swinging
and plant his back,
yep,
foot at the top of his drop, scan the field, and deliver a laser. I mean, it's very, very possible. You just want to see it before you draft the guy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 713-572-4610. By the way, De'Aaron King, for you University of Houston and Manville High School fans, 18-1 on the odds board. He's about eighth or ninth down the board there. So there you go.
Where's Malik Willis on the odds
board? Not on the board. Not on the board. Now, this is for the Heisman.
It's
so
tough,
for the
tough to get it out of a small school.
From,
yeah,
Liberty. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I'm a little surprised he's not on there, because there are some guys from Coastal Carolina and Nevada at the bottom of this. UCF's quarterback is on here at the bottom.
Well, yeah, that's where I kind of figured in a year, because he's so electric in some ways that maybe in a year where there's not clarity,
yeah,
you know, where you don't have a Trevor Lawrence type guy or something, that maybe they'd throw him in there.
And when Liberty and schools like that are on TV every week now, because there's a jillion channels you can watch football on. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that. Let's get a phone call in here. Steven is in Missouri City. Steven, welcome into Payne and Pendergast. Good morning.
Hey, how you guys doing, man?
Good, thanks.
Hey, I had a quick question for both of you. If we could go back to February, around that time when Deshaun had already requested a trade, do you think management and Nick Caserio, if they would have known about all the lawsuits and all the stuff that's going on now, do you think they would have traded Deshaun for all those draft picks and whatnot? And I just hang up and listen.
Okay, thanks, Steven. You want to lay it out there, Seth?
That's the tough question. Because you're not allowed to actually trade a player until the league year begins in early March. And the first public report about these allegations came out the day before free agency or the tampering period would have begun.
Right.
The first day of the free agency. So it's, even if the Texans wanted to trade him, they could have maybe come up with a deal in theory with somebody. But it's likely it would have been put on hold.
Right.
You know, think about it. If you're buying a car and you get to the lot and you find out they're like, oh, by the way, there's a lien on this car. Okay, well, we got to wait a minute and figure out if we can clear up this lien. I think there would have basically been a lien on Deshaun Watson at that point. The other part is like let's say that part isn't true. Let's say that there were no timing barriers or issues or anything. I don't fault the Texans for not trading him when they did, when perhaps they could have talked about it, because the best price was probably going to be closer to the draft.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to try to hindsight the Texans on this. I know a lot of people like to just say, well, they should have traded him when they, you know, as soon as he demanded a trade. Come on. Like, if you didn't know about the sexual assault allegations and Deshaun asked for that trade, is the best thing to do to hurry out and try to trade him immediately?
Of course not.
Nah, you let people really start to think about it. You let them start to look at the other rookies in the draft class and think, okay, boy, we'd be a whole lot better off. All right, I like some of these kids. I like Zach Wilson, but Deshaun Watson's a bird in the hand. I know he's good right now. So that's where it's almost impossible to hindsight this thing.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday.
Did I answer his question, or was his question actually should they have when they found out about the allegations?
That it was. Well, I think your answer was the appropriate one, which is it doesn't really matter because the allegations came to the forefront the day before the league business year started, the day before the trade would have become official. So it's irrelevant. All right, 713-572-4610 if you want in. Evan Gattis was on a podcast recently, former Astro Evan Gattis. He goes from former Astro to Astro legend with some of the things he said about the sign stealing on this podcast. We'll let you hear from him next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Good to be with you on a Friday. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. So Evan Gattis, who, of course, was part of the 2017 championship team for the Houston Astros, still refers to the Astros in the first person on Twitter. So we love Evan Gattis. He is, in his mind, and thus in the minds of I'll speak for Seth, Payne and Pendergast, we still view Evan Gattis as one of us, right, Seth? We love Evan Gattis.
Yeah, he's not a Brave,
right?
For sure,
right?
I don't think so. Sure. I don't think they'd properly appreciated him in Atlanta.
He was on the Strohs Across the Globe podcast recently, and he said some interesting things. First, here's Evan Gattis when he was asked about the team stealing signs by banging a garbage can back in 2017.
A lot of people on the team weren't exactly stoked on the idea. I was not one of them. I actually was a proponent. I was stoked on it, whatever. I know it wasn't right, but whatever everybody else was doing was wrong, and I've lost enough in the postseason. I didn't really care. So,
no,
but
fair enough.
No, to say Hinch could have done more is... All right. I bet he already feels that way, and I'm not going to put that on him.
No, that's cool. Absolutely.
And you had a lot of people. It was a movement, man. It was like a f***ing movement. It was the situation was more powerful than any individual.
All right, so that's a really interesting behind the scenes look at the sign stealing there, Seth. That's an actual player who not only used the scheme, but he was stoked about it.
he was
excited to do it almost.
Well, and the reason, I mean, he. And you know, he goes on later to say, you realize later, like, okay, wow, we really got swept up in all of it. As you were saying, it was a movement. But they felt like they were keeping up with the Joneses.
Yeah.
They, like, okay, well, other teams are doing this. We better get on board because at least the other contenders are doing this. That was a general feeling at the time amongst pitchers on many teams, and I think amongst the guys that decided to do it. Does that make it right? No, of course. It's never a valid excuse to say, well, everybody else was doing it. But I think it does put everything in context when people try to paint the Astros as like the lone offenders in this era of sign stealing, of electronic sign stealing, and more importantly, electronic sign stealing and relaying to the in real time during the game.
Yep. And so Evan Gattis went on to talk about, hey, you know, other teams were doing it. I would say that the team that's been the most vocal since the Astros were punished back in 2020, it's a race to the finish between the Dodgers and the Yankees, I would say, as the most vocal teams. But the Dodgers, you know, Cody Bellinger and other Dodgers have been very vocal and very sanctimonious when it comes to accusing the Astros and talking about what the Astros did back in 2017. Evan Gattis talked about the Dodgers.
There's people in our clubhouse that have had to call other people from the Dodgers clubhouse and say, hey, you need to clean up your shit because, we know, bro. We're not you got to be like that. Or like people saying, oh, they didn't earn it. Never mind. Without saying a name, I already said it. It's like, no, dude, like, no. It's just, it's lying after the fact. And the funny thing is that nobody spoke out about this while it was going on, even though everybody knew what was going on. Since Farquhar, people in the league already knew what was going on. They waited on MLB to come down because you know why? They were scared that they were going to come down on them.
He brings up Farquhar. The Farquhar he brings up there is the pitcher for the White Sox, and there's some pretty famous video out there from the September of 2017 where I think it's a John Boy video where he posts an at-bat that Farquhar is pitching, and Farquhar basically calls his catcher out in the middle of the at-bat. I forget which player was up to the plate. Might have even been Gattis who was up at the plate because I know Gattis was on some of those videos in the at-bats. And he brought his catcher out, and he's like, bro, what's that noise down the hallway down there? You know, like Farquhar had sniffed the whole thing out, and Gattis is right. Like, he had sniffed it out, and yet we don't – until Mike Fiers ratted everybody out in 2019, there was no movement on anything within baseball. It took two more years from players openly knowing something was going on with the Astros – which tells me that it wasn't just something going on with the Astros. It was something going on with a lot of teams.
And that's where, and honestly, that's where that gray area gets so hazardous. When you start dealing in this, like, well, everybody else is doing it. Because, with steroids, guys that were using steroids, it's very easy to say, like, well, everybody else was doing it. Well, not everybody else was doing it, but certainly a lot of people are doing it. So where's the line if it's not being policed? And baseball wasn't policing at all. You know, Clayton Kershaw last year came out and said he was sick of hearing people say everybody does it because the difference with the Astros was that they were doing it in real time. I don't know, for one, I don't know if Clayton Kershaw is aware of everything that happens on the offensive side of the ball. And two, The Astros looked like they were the only ones using garbage cans. What other players have said was that whistles, you know, claps, whatever. There were systems in place, just nothing as obvious as a garbage can. So I would imagine the extensiveness of it, and like the fact that the front office was involved with it, with the Astros, it was probably more advanced than what at least some of the other teams were trying to do. But I don't know how advanced it was with any of the other teams. There's no spreadsheet that shows exactly what everybody was doing.
I need somebody to connect the 6 degrees of Cody Bellinger to the Astros, because I feel like Cody, if the Astros had players that were calling people on the Dodgers to say, yeah, hey, listen, man, like you guys ain't clean either. I would love to know, because to me, if I'm an Astro player, the first person I'm calling is Cody Bellinger, because of that ridiculous diatribe that he went on about the
Cody
show.
Bellinger.
Everybody in the show doesn't respect them.
There's a system by which if somebody, if you looked out in right field and somebody was smoking a sativa strain, it was a curveball.
Yeah.
They're smoking an indica strain, it was something else.
Exactly. So I need to know who would call Cody Bellinger in that case. One more from Evan Gattis. Here's Evan Gattis on Mike Fiers.
I think there's a better way to go about it. I am also not mad. Like, I think somebody had to bring this shit up. Somebody had to bring it up, dude. Like,
Have you spoken to him?
The only reason I texted him afterwards, like, just shortly after, and since then I have not. Whatever. But, yep, like, just making sure he's all right. Because, like, at the moment, like, some people in Houston really hate that guy. And I'm like, yo, it's still my teammate. Like, hey, we won a World Series together. Threw a no-hitter for us against the Dodgers. Hey. Mm. Like, I got somewhat of an emotional connection to certain people. And he's not, like, the strongest person. Like I said, we're not buddies. We're not fishing buddies or anything like that. But still, I give a shit. He's a player, and he had something to say. Whatever. I don't think he went about it the right way, but I don't think a lot of people do things the way I would. So, whatever.
Seth, I can't believe I'm going to say this. I come away from listening. I listened to that podcast yesterday and listening to those cuts again. Miraculously, somebody who just stuck up for Mike Fiers, I come away from listening to him liking this guy, even not Fiers, liking Evan Gattis even more. I like Evan Gattis more now after listening to that podcast, a podcast in which he stuck up for the biggest rat in Houston sports history.
Well,
amazing.
It's the same. I mean, it's the same way when people ask you, like, how can you still love the Astros even though they cheated? Like, and I'd say, like, even if they were the only team that cheated, it's still when you love something or when you have affection for something, you don't stop loving it or having an affection for it because of one or two transgressions, because we're all human after all. So I think that, that's like, it makes sense when you hear Gattis say that. Now, I know there are other Astros that don't feel quite that forgiving.
No.
I personally have got some interesting texts. I think with Fiers, in a weird way, I kind of connect it to when Arian Foster was doing that interview. Remember when he divulged that his coach had bought him tacos when he was in college because nobody had money. And in that interview, it was interesting because you can kind of see when you're getting interviewed, especially, Sean, you know this because you did that one documentary interview where if you're getting interviewed on a long interview, you kind of go into almost like this consequence-free fantasy world where you get more and more detached from the rest of the world and you don't think about consequences as much.
Get loose.
Yeah, you get loose. You get loosened up, especially if it's a good interviewer.
Yeah.
And sometimes you get a little, you lose, and you say something that, you know, if you had time to sit and dissect it and think about the consequences, you wouldn't say it. And I'm guessing that's what happened with Fiers. The other thing that happened with Fiers, and I think a lot of pitchers, is the Astros were cheating in 2017. Other teams were cheating in 2017. The problem with the Astros was that they kept being so good offensively, especially in 2019. So the rumors just spread like wildfire.
Yeah.
Wow, the Astros are even better in 2019 offensively than they were in 2017. Yeah. They've got to be cheating, right? Because if they were cheating in 2017, then they're just as good in 2019. I think that was the thinking.
Yep.
And it was just pervasive. It was impossible. Once people believed that, they had to believe that something must still be going on. And that's the shame of it. If the Astros had just sucked in 2019, no, there would have been no investigation.
Right.
There's the only reason there was an investigation was because they were still awesome in 2019.
All right. We love anonymous scouts on this show. We're big into the anonymous scouts. We finally get to use the anonymous scouts for the second overall pick in the NBA draft. That's next.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so it's a big week next week. We know that Wednesday is the beginning of Camp Casario. Seth and I will be out there bright and early, 6 a.m. Wednesday morning for the first practice. Practice starts at 9 a.m. John and Landry are going to have players coming off the field each day to interview. So we've got you dialed in better than anybody when it comes to Camp Casario and the Houston Texans starting next week. That's Wednesday. Thursday is the NBA draft. Similar, Seth, to earlier this hour when I'm like, wow, looking at the Heisman list, we're looking at a bunch of quarterbacks here for the Texans. We've never really gone into a season covering the Texans, at least recently, where looking at quarterbacks at the collegiate level has been a thing. The Texans have been locked in on a quarterback solution more often than not over the last several years. Certainly not looking at it from a standpoint of a top pick in the draft. Similarly, the Rockets have not been relevant on the NBA draft front in a long, long time. Now, we understand that to be relevant on the NBA draft front, it means you probably weren't very good the year before. Nevertheless, here we are, and they have the number two pick next week, and that's exciting. Anonymous scouts. Seth, I had no idea. The anonymous scout thing has become much bigger over the last 4 or 5 years, and back when the Rockets draft picks mattered to us, the anonymous scout articles were not so much a thing back then. I'm glad that we get to take what you and I love so much in the football world and now apply it to the basketball world.
Are you saying that, like in the NBA, the anonymous scout thing has gotten bigger?
I think just in general, in journalism, the anonymous scout format has gotten bigger over the last 5 or 6 years. You know what I mean? Like it's, of articles like in The Athletic quoting anonymous scouts.
I don't know that Nolan Naraki was around for a long time and he just didn't have any filter at all. Yeah. He ended up basically getting railroaded out of the industry they killed the messenger with Nolan Naraki.
They did.
Scouts would tell him stuff and Nolan Naraki would be like, yep, I'm putting that in there. And then basically people accuse anytime it sounded basically like racist or something. They would blame Nolan Naraki himself instead of the actual scouts who said it.
Yeah.
Really, really weird.
He's basically reading quotes that he transcribed.
That's the way you keep your conscience clean. Yeah. Like, well, let's not do anything to stop the actual racism. We'll just we'll kill the messenger.
That's
and then
right.
we don't have to then we don't have to hear about it.
That's
yeah.
right. So here's what anonymous scouts are saying about the Rockets and the players that could be available with the second overall pick. I think most people expect Detroit to take Cade Cunningham from Oklahoma State with the first pick. That's the chalk.
There's a chance that maybe the, you know, Raphael Stone said that they make a lot more calls than they receive. They're always out there probing like Daryl Morey does, finding out, seeing where there are opportunities. So maybe they could, maybe the Rockets trade up. I hesitate to tell you how, because I can't for the life of me figure out how they'd be able to do that, but there's a chance.
Yeah, so, Raphael Stone said in this article by Kelly Iko that he's called every team three, four, five times. I'm picturing these GMs like, oh, God, it's Stone again.
It's like when your niece gets her first cell phone,
yeah.
and she's, like, texting you nonstop.
Right.
Like, yeah, I do. Yeah, I think cats are great, too.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, really. Yes. Yes, I told you. Yes, I told you. I do like cats.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, that's, you know, that's who the thumbs up, the thumbs up response that Lopez hates so much. That was made for your niece. All right.
Yeah.
So here's what the anonymous scouts are saying about the players that matter to us, Rocket fans. Jalen Green. I frankly need to put up a poll and see who Rocket fans want the team to take with the number two overall pick. But I want Jalen Green. After from the research I've done, the film I've watched, articles I've read, Jalen Green is the guy that I'm honed in on. Here's what the anonymous scouts are saying about Jalen Green, Seth. I could see him leading the league in scoring in a couple years. He's a highlight tape waiting to happen. His playmaking for others has to improve. He's not a point guard who can facilitate. He's more of a wing. He's in the gym. He wants to get better. The sky's the limit for this kid. My biggest question is, how quickly can he get to a point where he understands how to play? He needs to learn to harness that athletic ability. He's got that Zach LaVine, Bradley Beal stuff in his game. I didn't like reading that. Those are two volume scorers who've never played in a meaningful game in their lives.
Yeah, I know. That's where I was like, it was being presented as a positive.
Yeah.
But I didn't know. I thought, right? But I didn't quite know exactly if I wanted that. I didn't want that sentence in my future number two overall pick appraisal.
No. Not that they're not bad players. If you draft the number two overall pick and you get Zach LaVine or Bradley Beal out of that pick, I suppose it's a success, but I think you're hoping to get a guy who can raise the level of his team, and neither of those guys have really proven they can do anything more than just go score a lot of points. Says he's thin now, but he'll get stronger. That's the last thing they say about Jalen Green.
That's another thing that they say about Evan Mobley, who we'll talk about too, who's
the USC kid, yeah.
Yeah, freakish center that they could draft. I think that Jalen Green, there's not a lot to dislike about Jalen Green. I like the fact that he's played in the G League, and I don't know how much scouts value it compared to college experience playing versus college boys. You know, it's kind of like seeing a guy in Double A versus Triple A, I suppose. But it looks like this is the consensus pick that's going to the Rockets, and everybody seems to be on board with it. I personally like freaks of nature. Evan Mobley appeals to me because he's got more of a freak of nature appeal to him. He's a big man who can move, and he's got an outside shot.
Yeah.
That's where the NBA is going. Did you watch the championships? I like freaks of nature. I'm like an old school football coach that just loves gigantic, massive offensive and defensive linemen. In today's NBA, where the big man is newly relevant once again, they're relevant if they're guys like Evan Mobley.
Yeah.
And a big man can carry a team if they're big freaks who can move in space, and that's what Evan Mobley is.
Yeah, let's read what they had to say, the anonymous scouts, about Mobley. Mobley, of course, the 7-footer from USC, who is a one and done. This is what they're saying, the anonymous scouts. His impact on that USC team was incredible. He's got to get a lot stronger, and there's that theme again, to be able to handle the physicality of playing the five in our league. He can knock down a 17-footer, but he has to be able to move it back a few feet. Chris Bosh got there. Why couldn't he? I used to think he was too nice, but not anymore. Not a great rim protector, but he's big enough to deter people. My main concern is stability in his base and whether he can pick up weight. You wonder if he loves the game. Will he get into the weight room and change his body?
He does. I don't like that one phrase. Hey, Chris Bosh did it. Why can't he? The simple answer would be because perhaps he's not like Chris Bosh.
Yeah.
It's like, why didn't you just say that about Jordan? Like any point guard. Well, hey, Jordan did it.
Right.
Did you? Hey, I don't know if you heard the story, but he didn't even actually start on his freshman varsity team.
Yeah, right.
Did you know?
Yeah.
Jordan did it. What? Every kid that doesn't make the varsity as a freshman in high school, somebody's telling him, like, hey, Jordan did it. Why can't you?
Right.
Because you're not Michael Jordan. That's
right. That's right. So Evan Mobley, I think, Seth, when I look at Mobley, a center, granted a versatile center potentially, and Jalen Green, I think those are the two. I mean, we'll read what they have to say about Jalen Suggs from Gonzaga in a second, but I would be surprised if they took Jalen Suggs, especially – on the heels of what Raphael Stone said about Kevin Porter Jr.'s ability to be a playmaker a couple days ago when he had that media availability. Here's what I think about Green versus Mobley. One aspect of it that I do think, if Raphael Stone is of similar school of thought as Daryl Morey, and it would stand to reason that he would be given that he was working underneath Daryl Morey for a number of years, I do think one of the things they're going to look at when they draft either Green or Mobley is how fungible they are as an asset. Granted, you're looking to draft a guy to build around him as a building block, but maybe they don't wind up being a building block. Maybe they just wind up being a solid player. I think it's going to be easier to move a versatile wing in the NBA than it is to move a seven-footer who will have at that point. If Evan Mobley is being mixed into, you know, talks of being just an asset in a deal to move things around, then he has not shown what you need out of a seven-footer to be super fungible as an asset at that point. Whereas I think wings are, and I know the Rockets have felt this way in the past, that it's just easier to move a player like Jalen Green in a trade than it would be to move a player like Evan Mobley in a trade.
They're more plug and play.
Yes.
That you just get. Yeah, and I guess that's where the shooting ability comes in, that I think people can envision better and more easily. I mean, they're not looking for a guy that's going to be backing people up down on the post. They're looking for big men who can move and can shoot these days. And I think Mobley does have that. So I don't know if that's as big a deal, but it's probably going to – what are the odds right now in Vegas, Sean, on who the Rockets take?
I haven't seen it.
Can I get action on that, on the number two overall?
I'm sure you can somewhere. You know what? I'll look that up during the next round. I'm opening up the website I use for this stuff right now to remind me to look that up during the next break in the 8 o'clock hour here. So, Seth, based on all the smoke that you and I are seeing, reading, playing on our show, you and I discussing it, I'm with you, what you said earlier this segment. It really does feel like Jalen Green is the guy right now for the Rockets. You know, it feels like that's the pick right now for them. So, Jalen Suggs, here's what the anonymous scouts are saying about Gonzaga point guard Jalen Suggs. He's not the most talented player in the draft skill-wise, but he's going to rip your heart out to win a drill. I've got Bill O'Brien would love this guy.
Ooh, yeah, I like him.
Yeah.
But tell me about his family. Bill O'Brien's going to want to know about his family.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
If his dad owns like a plumbing company or something, he's in.
Right.
That is 100%.
The only thing I would question, this is the anonymous scout again, the only thing I would question is his shooting. He will impact your organization and help you win games. I've heard his workouts have been great, but people are surprised by how much work his passing needs. He's got unbelievable confidence and swagger. He's in the Jamal Murray mode. If there's a weakness, he's got average size for his position in our league. He's not going to get to the basket like he did in college. I do agree with that. He can be a little turnover prone. I the other thing I think, Seth, too, is, and I know Gonzaga was the number one team for most of the year, and I know that they made it to the finals of March Madness and whatnot. Of all three of these guys, Suggs would be the one where I would be most concerned about, when I look at his film, the level of competition that he was playing. You have so little to go on with any of these guys now in the NBA. You have high school film, AAU film, and for most of these guys, 1 year of college or the G League. Suggs, 90% of his schedule, he's playing Pepperdine. And he's playing, you know, little parochial schools nestled up in the northwestern part of the country, you know?
The NBA, NBA.com, does a consensus mock draft. They take a bunch of the mock drafts and just give the most common picks for each.
What are we seeing?
And right now, they did 12 mock drafts, or they surveyed 12 mock drafts. Cade Cunningham was unanimous going to the Pistons.
Yeah.
Jalen Green, 9 of 12 votes were Jalen Green going to the Rockets.
Okay.
Then Evan Mobley to the Cavs, and Jalen Suggs to the Raptors.
Okay, that's kind of what I feel, barring a trade, that's kind of what I'm feeling right now. I could see maybe the Raptors moving up from 4 to 3 because they need a big man, but that's kind of how I'm feeling about it too. All right. 713.
I just think about Now I'm just thinking about Suggs is the classic guy that there's reasons he doesn't go top three because of athleticism and whatnot.
Yeah.
But then he ends up being a really, really good player, especially under Nick Nurse, and you're just shooting yourself. You're punching yourself in the head 3 years later
because yeah.
It made sense not to draft him in the top three. But then you look back at it and you're like, look, he's everything you want. He's a gym rat.
I'm okay.
He loves his teammates, all these things.
And you're right, and you're probably gonna be right about that, and yet I'm 100% okay with the Rockets shooting for the moon. You know what I mean? Like you've got a chance to shoot for the moon. Shoot for the moon. All right, let's get to some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
All right, the big headline in the NFL yesterday, as we head towards Camp Casario next week here in Houston, training camp around the NFL, starting with most of the teams starting on Tuesday of next week. The big news yesterday was the NFL coming down with their policy on COVID for the upcoming season. Tom Pelissero had the NFL Network had an extensive Twitter thread about this, and he said the NFL just informed clubs that if a game cannot be rescheduled during the 18-week season in 2021 due to a COVID outbreak among unvaccinated players, the team with the outbreak will forfeit and be credited with a loss for playoff seeding, per sources, Pelissero says, and I agree with this. Massive implications if indeed a team winds up having to forfeit a game this season. But the message is very clear, and the mandate or the release from the NFL yesterday to the players was fairly lengthy. There's a lot of stuff in there, but that's the main thing that you need to know is that the NFL is basically, Seth, kind of mandating players go get vaccinated without telling players you need to go get vaccinated.
Well, and that's where it's interesting, because it's not as big a penalty if it happens because of vaccinated players.
Right.
So just by getting vaccinated. So, I mean, you already have relaxed restrictions if 85% of the club is vaccinated.
Yep.
So it's just easier to operate as a player. You have more individual freedom. You can come and go as you please. You can actually hang out with your teammates, all that stuff, mm-hmm. if you're vaccinated. But this kicks it up a notch, because now it's not clear. It's not like if you have an outbreak but you're 85% vaccinated that you're off the hook. It's just that, no, if the unvaccinated individuals are the cause of this outbreak, then we're going to go ahead and just penalize everybody from both teams.
And when Seth is referring to penalize everybody, we didn't mention this yet. Players lose game checks on both teams. So if there is an outbreak on, say, I don't know, the Tennessee Titans, I feel it's reasonable to bring them up, seeing as they had one of the biggest outbreaks of the season last year. Let's say the Titans are playing the Texans in week 10 or whatever it is, and their unvaccinated players have an outbreak. The Titans would forfeit that game for the purposes of the standings, and the players on both teams would lose their game checks. So think about that. You could be Laremy Tunsil. Laremy Tunsil's game checks are probably, I don't know, about 1.2, 1.3 million, right? 17 weeks divided by 22 million divided by 17 weeks, 1.2, 1.3 million. You could lose 1.2, 1.3 million as Laremy Tunsil because unvaccinated guys on the Titans went out and got the Ronies.
You know, Sean, in the old days, this would have been taken care of already by a bunch of vets. A bunch of veteran offensive linemen or something that would have just gone around and forcibly vaccinated.
Held them down and vaccinated them.
It was a different time back then.
Right.
It was like locker room. The locker room leadership was more powerful. Yeah. They would
tied guys.
And then they would have tied him to the goalpost, vaccinated him, and then let him sit there and think about it for a while until they came back to get him.
So what happened with polio back in the day?
That's right.
Leather helmets.
Right. A lot of polio vaccine truthers back in the day who were like, nah, I'll take my chances.
<That's right. laughs> I'll take my chances. And if y'all lose your $100 game check, then so be it.
Yeah.
So that's big news, though, in the NFL, and probably the most outspoken player about this. He put up a tweet that he quickly deleted, but he's a very, very prominent player in the league.
Most visibly outspoken about this. I guess there's more. Cole Beasley's probably the most outspoken opponent to the vaccination policy, but But one DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, I guess I'm more referring to the league policy yesterday. Hopkins was the main one that spoke out about it yesterday, but he deleted the tweet. But here's what DeAndre Hopkins said in the tweet. Never thought I would say this, but being in a position to hurt my team because I don't want to partake in the vaccine is making me question my future in the NFL. He deleted that. After he deleted that, he tweeted, freedom, question mark, which he then deleted also. He later tweeted, quote, 9 more years left in me. Y'all have a good day with the cool shades emoji there. So DeAndre Hopkins not retiring anytime soon. But probably, I would imagine Hopkins reflecting the views of at least a handful of players around the league. Like, okay, you're basically telling me I have to go get vaccinated now.
Yeah, I mean, it's putting extreme pressure on him. And I don't know if I saw a bunch of players upset, or several players upset with the Players Association. Mm-hmm. And I think that I don't know. I wouldn't anticipate a whole lot of pushback from the NFLPA on this, because the NFLPA itself has been playing the card of, hey, we're trying to be super careful about COVID here. Yeah. We don't want guys at the facility because COVID. So I don't want to say they've painted themselves into a corner, but in terms of whether they feel like the NFL is overreaching or, you know, making decisions without their approval, I don't know if they really have they haven't really established an ability to argue that right now.
Yeah.
Because they've been pretty proactive about the vaccine itself, about COVID as well.
Yep. Indianapolis Colts owner Jim Irsay said Thursday that more than 50% of the roster is vaccinated, and the team is, quote, hopefully headed towards 100%, maybe even 150%. Our team is going to be 150% vaccinated, first time in history. You're going to have a team. So, yeah, Irsay talks. So my point in bringing that up was, one, to use my Irsay voice, and two, to point out you have a lot of teams now in the wake of this policy, Seth, declaring where they are with vaccinations. Because I think there's a lot of fans around the league going, okay, do I have to worry about my team forfeiting games now? So a lot of players, a lot of teams, owners saying that, hey, we're 85% there. 16 NFL teams have hit a vaccination rate of 85% or higher, according to Jeremy Fowler of ESPN. So there you go.
Wait, what percent?
16 teams have reached 85% or higher in vaccination. So half the league is 85% or more vaccinated.
Now, the Colts were one of two teams that had less than 50% a little while back. So this new development could be good news for the Texans in picking up a victory at some point this season, if the Colts do indeed have an outbreak and that it's because of unvaccinated individuals.
We're rooting for outbreaks.
Crossing my finger.
Someone asked me this earlier. It's an interesting question that I don't have the answer to, but I can, I guess, speculate, given that I'm such a degenerate. And Seth, you probably could too, now that you've gotten your 3 or 4 book primer on being a degenerate gambler. Do forfeits affect season win total in Vegas? You know, in other words, you bet the over on the Texans, 3.5 wins, and one of the wins is they go 4-13, and one of the games is a forfeit. I would imagine, I don't know the answer to that, if forfeits are going to count as wins on the season win total. I think there's a chance it could just nullify your bet. Because a lot of times, in order to win on a season win total bet in sports, they've got to play the full season. You know.
Well, okay, yeah, that's interesting. They're like, well, in baseball, the starting pitcher goes down, it nullifies your bet.
You can bet that way. Yeah, you can. If you can bet, I don't want to go too deep in the weeds on this. You can bet on baseball games based on the pitcher, the listed pitcher, actually starting the game. Like if Justin Verlander had an elbow issue before the game started, and you said, I'm only betting this game if Verlander is starting this game, then yes, you can get your bet nullified.
Yeah. I thought they automatically did. Like if it's a sudden scratch or something, they don't nullify the bet on the actual outcome.
You can choose. You can choose. Okay. Yeah, you can choose.
Sean, this is where I got book learning right now, but no practical knowledge.
Yeah,
because I haven't been actually betting, and I've been reading about it, I'm like, man, I'm not going to understand some of this stuff until I could lose money on it.
Yeah.
So I need to get out there and gamble.
You
got to
get bloodied up a little bit. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So my guess would be. So for win totals, I bet they, because what, like sometimes the gaming commission will get involved in this, right? My guess would be that they'll accept, because it is a forfeit. I mean, one team wins, one team loses, and that is part of the known. This is not an act of God or something that comes up out of nowhere. This is something that you know headed into the season. So I'm going to say that the forfeit will just count as a normal run-of-the-mill loss or win on the season win total.
Is that what you would do if you were the commissioner of common sense in gambling?
That's what I would, because it's a known condition. It's like these are the rules of the game. Yep. This is one thing you have to – just like injuries are – you know, if a starting quarterback – if you put a bet for the over for the Green Bay Packers – well, no, you shouldn't do the Packers. An over for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah.
And then Tom Brady gets injured in week one, then it doesn't matter. You know, you're out of luck. So there you go.
I like that. That's good rationale. I don't know if that's what the books are going to do, but I like your rationale. All right, tonight, Minute Maid Park. Astros coming off of an off day, coming off of a loss to the Indians on Wednesday. The Rangers are coming to town. That's nice enough news that the Rangers are coming to town. It's good way to get back on track if you're the Astros. But Seth, the big news tonight is it's Star Wars night out at the ballpark. And I will be there with my wife, Amy, and I have already put in the ticket to get our Yordan Alvarez Mandalorian bobblehead doll.
What is Amy going to be dressed as? Or who is Amy going to be dressed as?
She would probably, I would guess Princess Leia would be what she would go as.
That's got to be like 75%, right, of women at the...
Well, there's, you know, the new Star Wars movies have this Rey character.
That's true.
Who is a, you know, kind of much more of a modern day woman, you know what I mean?
Like, you can pull off a Rey look without having to invest in earmuffs.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, yeah.
You don't have to have those buns.
Cinnabuns on the side of your head, yeah.
Yeah. Still a stupid look. I mean, I knew at the time that was a dumb look. I've still never gotten on board with the buns on the side.
She scrapped it after the first one, you know what I mean? Like, after that, Princess Leia went with ponytails and braids and things like that.
She went with abs in Return of the Jedi.
I know.
That was the one that really blew your adolescent mind back in the day.
Yeah, yeah. But Princess Leia did not want to dress like that. Jabba the Hutt forced her to dress like that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I guess I got to kind of rethink this. Yeah. Never mind. I take it all back. Sorry. See, Sean? If I had my privilege-checking board of directors, somebody would have alerted me that before I said it. They would have given me a little shock.
That's right.
Like, hey, Seth, remember, she was a slave at that point. Like, she was Jabba the Hutt's...
Like, she was chained to him.
Yeah.
You know, she was chained. So, but at any rate, so I don't know that there's going to be many Princess Leia Jabba the Hutt Palace outfits out there. I'm here for it. If any of you ladies want to dress up as Jabba the Hutt Palace version of Princess Leia... if you got the goods, then go ahead and do it. Be bopping and scotting out there. No nudity.
Carrie Fisher had, by the way, at one point, when she responded to people talking about that aspect of it, saying, like, all right, it's a freaking movie. She was like, yeah, you know what?
Exactly.
You know what? Yeah, I was playing the part of a prisoner on a movie set.
Yeah.
And after we were done shooting it, I took the chains off. Because it was all pretend. Yeah.
Yeah. The inability of Star Wars fans to keep from blurring reality with the movie is it's not good.
Who's the Mandalorian bobblehead tonight?
It's Yordan.
Ooh.
Yeah. And how about this? Remember back in the day, Seth, when they'd give away remember back in the day in 2019 when they would have bobblehead giveaways? They would be true giveaways. Like, you had to show up at the ballpark and be among the first 10,000 or whatever. So you'd have these lines around the corner of the park. I guess maybe A, to generate some money with it, but B, not to have lines of people around the park before games. I purchased, which I had no problem doing, it was $30. I purchased my Yordan Alvarez bobblehead last night when I bought the tickets on Astros.com. I bought our tickets. And then it's almost like when you're shopping on Amazon or for a gift basket, where they're like, oh, you bought this. Hey, how'd you like to add some cookies to it? Or, hey, how'd you like to add this? So I bought our two tickets, and then I get a little pop-up. Do you want to buy your Yordan Alvarez bobblehead right now? And I said, absolutely I would. I don't feel like standing in line. I want to make sure I get one. You know what I mean? So I'm willing to. So I guess I just take this barcode that's on my phone for the Yordan dealio and go to a desk somewhere at Minute Maid Park, and I'll show it to them, and they'll give me my bobblehead doll.
Dude, I think, you know what, honestly?
Yeah.
This is an idea for Scott over at HEB, free of charge. Honestly, I think you guys, you know, like, I like donating my change to whatever charity is I'm checking out, just like the next guy. I think sometimes, though, you're forgetting that you could, I think if you like, if you gave customers the chance to tack on a Yordan bobblehead as they checked out,
yeah.
I think, and it would almost be like you can get a Yordan bobblehead, and like somebody will emerge with a Yordan bobblehead for you or something. Start being a little bit more aggressive at the checkout there. You can alternate to charities. You know, I'll donate to you know, feed some people 1 week, but then the next week, give me a chance to get a Yordan bobblehead.
Feed some people. Yeah. Hashtag feed some people.
That's what it says. Would you like to donate your change to people that need to be fed? Sure. What do you think I'm a jerk? That's what it feels like. Every damn time, Sean, every damn time, dude. I check out anywhere these days, basically you get something flashes up on the screen and is like, are you a horrible human being or are you not?
Every time.
Like, come on, man. It's every time. Like I can't be donating to a dollar to every damn charity in the world every single time I check out.
Oh, yeah. So that'll be tonight at Minute Maid Park. Star Wars night, Rangers coming to town. And if you're out there and you see Amy, my wife, rolling around with the two Cinnabons on the side of her head, and you see me rolling around there next to her as Han Solo or possibly a Wookiee, be sure to walk up and say. Be sure to walk up and say, "May the Force be with you."
If I get be so hot and miserable by the time you're done being a Wookiee.
I'm also only 5'9". That doesn't help.
I just remind Carl Sagan. Carl Sagan did this thing. The old guy that before Neil Tyson DeGrasse or Neil deGrasse Tyson, it was Carl Sagan that was doing that stuff. He was on Johnny Carson talking about how, like, it's weird, you know, that this world existed apparently, you know, eons ago, and yet somehow everybody in charge is like a white guy that looks like us. <It's> really, what are the odds? And like, meanwhile, even the Wookiee can't get really equal treatment.
Nope. Although the Wookiee is the one who's living the longest in this whole saga, so that's he's got that going for him. That's pretty funny.
Well, yeah. And they got more diverse as they went along.
They
obviously
did.
Like, there were some people that had objections. I don't know how many. I didn't see any of these people in real life, but the people that had objections to a black Skywalker or a black stormtrooper. My objection was, how the hell is there a doughy stormtrooper? Right. These guys all look. I have no idea. I had no idea what their skin. I always thought they were robots for the first 30 years of my life. And they bring this guy, and it's like, are we just going to ignore the fact that this kid's fat, like by Hollywood standards?
Seth,
I don't care about his skin color. He's fat.
Not to interrupt you, but I have 10 seconds to get in the station ID. You're listening to KLT and KLT HD2 and Odyssey Station. Sorry about that. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I don't want to get fined by the FCC.
But seriously,
those tickets don't buy themselves.
Everybody's acting like I didn't even notice his color. I look like Sean. I'm blind to it. He's fat. By Hollywood standards.
He is. You're talking about Finn. Yeah, he is. He's chunky, no doubt.
By Hollywood standards.
By Hollywood standards. Yeah, we're not fat shaming him, but
he's just fine in real life and everything.
You would think you'd have to be in good shape to be a stormtrooper.
Well, frankly, by stormtrooper standards, he had a doughy physique.
He did.
You know, those guys running around, they all look pretty lean and lithe.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like the extraordinary thing about him was not the color of his skin. It was that he was carrying like 40 to 50 extra pounds of lard.
Great. Now I can't watch any of the last three Star Wars movies without thinking, damn, Finn is chunky. He is. Thanks a lot, Seth.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.